before the civil rights era, many African American families, or I should say most, were not even allowed to be served by your average adoption agency. So if we go back in history from the time African Americans came to this country during slavery and post-slavery, there were many times families were separated and extended family, friends, neighbors would raise children. So that tradition has continued. African American families made their own arrangements informally to care for children.
Why would African Americans not be allowed to participate in adoption services, in formal services that existed?
That's a part of our history. There were a number of areas and services that families of color were kept out of, similar to things like school segregation. So it was just another form of segregation during a period of time that in our history we probably don't like to think of, but it is a reality.
The situation today in McLean County pretty much parallels the national level, and that is that African Americans are a small percentage of the population here in McLean County, and yet they comprise almost half the number of children in foster care. Why is that?
There are a number of structural factors within our society that may create the overrepresentation of children in foster care. So, for example, there is some evidence that when a child is born, if that child is born to a low-income mother who may be a mother of color, African-American mother, she may be more likely to be tested for substances at birth, where a middle-class family, particularly a white middle-class family, may have a substance abuse issue but not receive that testing. Other areas in distressed communities that some African-American families may be living in, things like poverty, substance abuse, domestic violence. Again, these are issues that all communities contend with, but because of a number of factors related to how our society views families and individuals of color, many times those families get involved in the child welfare system versus being diverted into supportive resources, counseling, domestic violence treatment, etc.
What is it that you're hoping will happen as a result of this conference? What are you hoping to jumpstart here?
The whole topic of adoption really isn't receiving the attention that it did, say, 10, 20 years ago. So we want this conference to provide an opportunity for families, for individuals, professionals to come together to talk about ways to break down some of the barriers that might be preventing families from adopting. Also, just to be able to talk about the beauty of caring for children and what that looks like when a child is in foster care and is available for adoption. How does one maneuver through that process? So we'll have a panel of adoptive parents, adoptees, adoption professionals, as well as researchers. We have 5 breakout sessions on various topics related to both adoption and foster care. And so it's an opportunity, again, to fellowship, to gather information, to network, and really establish those relationships that are needed to break down barriers.
What would you say are the major barriers if you had to list 2, 3, 4 of them?
Sometimes misperceptions on both parts, misperceptions about African American families, the perception that they are not likely to adopt at same rates as others. Again, that's a misperception because there's been informal adoptions going on for years. There's also sometimes misperceptions about resources available to families who seek to adopt. And sometimes just having some conversation with other professionals or other adoptive families can really help tip the scale. So those are some of the major misperceptions.
Is the conference mainly aimed at helping break down the barriers to African American families to adoption, or should white families come who maybe would be interested in raising an African American child?
Absolutely. You know, we really live in a multicultural society. One of our workshops specifically addresses multicultural families. So families who are adopting African-American children who may not be African-American themselves. Because again, children, whether they're adopted by an African-American family or a white family, or a family of another race, those families need support, maybe different kinds of support. So we welcome all families, all community members, and people who generally care about children to attend this conference. It is free of charge. There's a banquet. We have our keynote speaker, who's Victoria Rowell. She's an actress who, she just has a long resume, but she was in Diagnosis Murder, as well as The Young and Restless. And she grew up in foster care. So she wrote a book called The Women Who Raised Me, and just really talks about her journey. And her mother had a history of mental illness, and how she was able to overcome some of those early life challenges.
One of your goals, I'm assuming, and one of the things you'll be discussing at your conference, is how to get more African-American families to adopt African-American children.
Absolutely. Because again, when we have the history of informal adoptions, sometimes there are agencies, quite frankly, still, even though services are offered and to every family, there's still perhaps some challenges that agencies face being able to adequately serve and recruit African-American families.
What is the hurdle? Why is it difficult to recruit African-American families to adopt this large pool of children who really need a home?
Many of the families that are caring for children in foster care currently are other relatives, extended family. And so one of the barriers is, say if you have a grandmother or an aunt or an uncle who is raising their child, they may feel reluctant to actually take the step and adopt, because that involves terminating the parental rights of the child who would be a family member, the biological family member. The other thing is for non-related adoptions, some of the barriers related to recruitment may be things like, do we really have the relationships established within African-American community so that there is a level of trust, so that there is communication? Even things like, what are the office hours of the agency? If the agency is open during 9 to 5 hours and families are working, do they have access to those services? There were years when I worked in adoption myself, and we saw that one of the barriers sometimes was a huge ream of paperwork that people receive. You're working every day, and you know your life is busy, and in order to adopt, you get a packet of 50 pages worth of material that you have to read. And so there are ways through interviewing and other avenues to break down some of those barriers to make it easier for families to adopt.
Is part of the issue that many African-American families maybe just cannot afford to do an adoption?
Sure. Although, you know, in many ways, there's misconceptions about that, because particularly when we're talking about children who are in foster care needing homes, the majority of those children, because of past traumas, et cetera, that have gone on in their lives, families many times are eligible for adoption subsidies. So again, when those relationships are established within communities of color, so families have a better understanding of the resources that may be available, even things like support for college in some cases, ongoing support for medical care and things like that. There are subsidies available. Many times families just frankly aren't aware of those resources.
You obviously have a passion for this area. I'm wondering your own personal story.
Actually, I'm a member of the adoption community myself. I was raised, which started out as an informal caregiving situation. I was raised by my great aunt and uncle after my birth mother passed away when I was 2 years old. And my family did later adopt me. It was done privately, again, without the support of an agency. And, you know, my parents told me that they had tried to go through an adoption agency to adopt, and this was in the 60s, I'm dating myself, but they were told that because they didn't have two bathrooms in the house, to adopt one child, they had a standard that there had to be two bathrooms in the house for a family to adopt. So again, what a barrier to a good family to have money to do construction on their home.
I hope we've progressed a little bit since
then. I hope so, too. Yes, we have.
Dr. Doris Houston is a professor of social work at Illinois State University. She's also the director of the Center for Child Welfare and Adoption Services. She will be involved in a conference called The Heart and Soul of Adoption about breaking down barriers to adoption. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Judy. I appreciate your time.
I'm Judy Valente.